call the meeting of the Town Amherst Planning Commission to order. And we do have a call, thank you all. Citizens' comments, did we have any sheets or?
We did not do a sheet, but I do think you have people who may want to comment.
Oh, okay. All right, who would like to comment? Give us your name and address, and so we can get it for the record.
All right, I'm Sunny Sundar Murthy, I live at 134 Second Street. So I'm a town resident. Good evening. I have several concerns about the sections of the sign ordinance that are going to be reviewed tonight. First of all, on an administrative note, paragraphs 8 through 13 of the signs prohibited in all signs district, that section is entirely new language, but somehow only paragraph 13 is in red. Paragraphs 8 through 13 should all be in red for that section because all of it's new. So I just wanted to make sure you recognize that. Again, that's the signs prohibited in all sign districts, 8 through 13. Second, the restriction of one freestanding sign in commercial and mixed-use districts continues to be insufficient. There are multiple businesses with more than one current freestanding sign right now, including Quickie and McDonald's. McDonald's has their main sign, but they also have two freestanding menu boards. While menu boards have their own additional square footage allowance, there's nothing in the proposed ordinance that would allow for additional freestanding signs for things like menus. With Quickie, there are multiple freestanding signs currently advertising products around the gas pumps. All of these are illegal since they're in addition to the one main Marathon sign. While some of this would be grandfathered, this demonstrates the insufficiency of only one freestanding sign, and I believe we need to increase that limit. The two-sign restriction on window signs and square footage limits for window signs are insufficient for the town of Amherst. There are many types of commercial signs that businesses put in windows. This includes open signs, product advertising signs, special offers, special event signs, etc. Just counting some of the window signs in town, I've counted some businesses with 10 plus signs in their windows. McDonald's and Hardee's currently have signs in their windows that would violate the sign number limit and square footage limits that you have proposed. So does Hill Hardware. There would be no grandfathering for temporary signs, which is something to keep in mind because they're changed out. As soon as someone would change them out, they would be in violation. The number of signs and the square footage limits for window signs either needs to be greatly expanded or the limits for window signs needs to be eliminated altogether. Another problem with window sign limits being proposed is that they are regulated under signs requiring a permit. Any change to window signs would require having to go through the permitting process. We don't want businesses to have to apply for a new permit every time they change the special that might be advertised in the window. If window signs are going to be regulated, the window sign regulation should be under the signs not requiring a permit section. Another problem with the proposed ordinance language is the treatment of signs that are not currently in use. If a non-conforming sign is not used for 2 years, it loses its non-conformity and has to be torn down. That's what's being proposed. That could be a real problem in town where sometimes it can take several years to fill a vacant property here in town. If a property is having a hard time being leased, are we going to make things harder for them by requiring that they tear down their non-conforming sign? I also take issue with the regulations that require a non-conforming sign to be lowered and shrunk by 25% every time the structure is worked on, even when the work involves bringing the sign closer into conformity with the sign ordinance in other ways. We will be disincentivizing any structural work to signs if they have to be shrunk every time they're worked on. There are also regulations proposed that makes a sign owner lose their nonconformity when a sign is destroyed by greater than 50% of its value. So if a truck knocks down a nonconforming sign, you'll never be allowed to have that type of sign again. I think that's too harsh. Finally, there's a proposal in the sign ordinance that assumes that a nonconforming sign owner is guilty until proven innocent. While maintaining a sign registry for nonconforming signs is a worthy goal, sign owners should not have the burden placed on them to prove their innocence. If the town believes a sign is in violation, the town should have the burden to prove that that's the case. And finally, regarding the sign ordinance in general, I want to point out that there are still some very concerning constitutional concerns with the non-commercial sign regulations. While the two-sign limit and the durational limits have been eliminated, there is still a very strict square footage limit proposed for free speech. You cannot have a stricter size limit for non-commercial speech than you have for commercial speech. Several districts, zoning districts, have aggregate square footage limits in the hundreds of square feet. Non-commercial speech limits must be equal or greater to those commercial limits. If not, that is considered content-based discrimination under the Constitution. Free speech is a fundamental constitutional right, and content-based regulations are presumptively invalid. To survive strict constitutional scrutiny, content-based regulations must be narrowly tailored to meet a compelling government interest. The square footage limits for non-commercial speech must match or exceed commercial limits by zoning district, or they must be eliminated altogether. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. No comments from the public. The minutes for our February the 5th meeting, do you have a motion to accept those? Any changes? I think I saw. Do I have a motion to accept the minutes?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, minutes approved. Comments for the capital improvement program?
Yes, ma'am, thank you. So at your last meeting, I requested that you set a public hearing, and you're going to hear kind of this rigmarole twice. We asked you to set two public hearings. One of those for the capital improvement program and one of those for a rezoning of 305 Sunset Drive. Neither of those are going to be able to be heard tonight. There have been issues at the news in advance. They had a cyber attack that actually kept them from publishing at least one day, but then even after they got back up and running, they had additional issues with getting some of their public notices published. And so, for example, on 305 Sunset, we had a pagination error, so part of the public notice appeared on one page and part on the other, so it was not a duly advertised public hearing. So my request to you tonight is that because these are things that got partially advertised, in particular 305 Sunset, neighbors, adjacent property owners did receive a notice for this. So my request would be on both of these that you simply take comment if anyone has any. If there are any questions or concerns from the commissioners, that we discuss those tonight. And then I don't need to ask you to set another public hearing because you already did. I just need to get it duly advertised for your next meeting. But so just, you know, if we could on the capital improvement program, if there were any questions or concerns from the commission, I'm happy to answer those. And also if you could see if there's any members of the public who wanted to speak to it.
Okay. Do commissioners have any comments on that? No. Okay. I think we kind of discussed it. We did it well last time. So, any of the audience on the capital improvement? Okay. All right. So we'll go on to the 305 Sunset.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. 305 Sunset Drive is a residence near the edge of town. It is currently zoned A1. There is some interest by an adjacent property owner to purchase a portion of the property that is the open, kind of more agricultural in nature portion of the property. The homeowner of the home at 305 Sunset would retain the home and the home lot. However, because of our ordinance requirements for an agriculturally zoned piece of property, if the house were to remain agriculture in nature, then what would happen is they would have to divide off like 5 acres with the house. So in order to have it be a more rationally sized house lot, they're requesting rezoning to R1. It matches the adjacent property. We did send out public notice on this, so it is possible. I have not received any comments from any neighbors, but it is possible you do have comments on this. And I'm happy to answer any questions, see if there's any public comment, and then we can have the public hearing on this next month.
Any comments on?
Is there a map or something available to show where that lot sits? We live on 350,
which is right.
Okay. We did have a map, but I don't.
I'm gonna pull it up on the screen.
C
Sarah, just out of curiosity, does some of that, well, if it, it's divided off, will some of that border our property also?
Yes.
At the back field, that's what I thought.
Yes, I think you were on my adjacent notification list.
I didn't receive anything. But there, I got something from the town when I was out of town. Was it a certified letter?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they never left. I saw it like come to the mail. You know how like the mail will send you something here?
Right.
But we actually never got a like a
hard copy.
Yes, nothing ever made it to our mailbox or to the house to pick it up, so I didn't know what happened to it.
So if you want to see the, there's a screen you can see very close up behind you. What they would be doing is dividing off what is that house lot, so you see that as a separate lot, and then the residual would be, the resident of the property would be joined with the adjacent property. So from a kind of neighbor's perspective, nothing would actually change in terms of the development of the property, because you would just be, they would be dividing off a lot for that existing home, and then all of that open acreage would join with the adjacent property. It is Paul Motley who is looking to purchase the property to join it with existing property so that they can kind of consolidate with the agricultural use.
So is this proposed lot right beside Mrs. Brown's house?
It is.
Or is it closer to the other house?
It is Mrs. Brown's
house. It is Mrs. Brown's house. She wants to divide that. That would be divided, rezoned to R so that she would be able to divide that one off.
Okay.
Just the lot. It's currently just one big agricultural lot.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so just the portion that is around the house would be rezoned to residential so that she could have a normal house size lot, and then the adjacent agriculture would get joined with the other lots.
So do you plan on building anything on this lot?
Not at this time.
It's going to stay agricultural.
It's going to stay agriculture.
It's going to stay agriculture.
Joined with the adjacent agricultural lot.
Okay.
And he'll probably keep it as a field for hay.
And cow, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is his current plan. Obviously,
yeah.
Things can change in the future, but with it not being rezoned, where the remainder, the residue parcels are, with the fact that they're not looking to rezone that, that makes it apparent that they're not looking to have any development activity at this time.
Do you know if they would have any driveway up through that bank for his residence?
I would not know that, no.
All right.
Any other comments on 305 Sunset?
And we will get this advertised and hopefully have no issues, and we will send out additional adjacent notification to all of the surrounding property owners so that they will be notified of the new hearing dates.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, we are down to the sign ordinance.
Yes, we, Mr. Sunder Murphy talked about signs prohibited. We actually talked about that last time. I was not aware that we had a snafu on part of that not showing as being new. I have to tell you that, you know, I completely believe him, because realistically, Vicki and I have sent this back and forth amongst ourselves multiple times, and I can see that it is quite possible that we could have managed to have that not show up.
Sarah,
yes, ma'am.
Actually, there, signs prohibited in all sign districts are in our old, are in our present sign ordinances. I think the number is just off. It was 580. And I'm not sure what was changed in here that's not in red, but I mean, I can check on that.
Right, we'll take a look at that and have that clear next time. We can note where those changes were made and make sure that that's accurate.
Right.
So I will have that for you before you take it to public hearing so it's clear to everyone.
And fix the numbers.
Okay, so the next thing that we were gonna talk about is what is actually the sections on each type of sign area, so the commercial districts, the residential districts, and so forth. There are not huge changes being made in this section of the sign ordinance. We were really more looking to do things in the other portion. As was mentioned, the one big change is the inclusion of window-mounted signs. I know when we talked before, there was not interest from the commission in changing freestanding signs or building-mounted signs. If that's changed, let me know. Because happy to bring whatever information is helpful to the commission on that. Mr. Sundermurthy's comment about window-mounted signs, whether or not you put it in this section or whether you put it in signs permitted without, signs without a permit, this is an acceptable thing to put in either place. So he is correct. If you put that in, you can have these signs without a permit, then what that means is people kind of at will would put up window-mounted signs. And as long as they're within the parameters of the ordinance, they could move those, put them wherever they wanted or whatnot. If you put it in this portion of the ordinance, then what I would be looking to permit at that point is essentially the size and location of those signs. So the expectation would be, I know where they're going to be and I know the size of them. That would be kind of a documented thing that I would be reviewing. The content of it, whether it advertised cheeseburgers or hot apple pie, I would not pay attention to. I would really just be checking to see whether or not we were addressing that. Philosophically, I don't have a strong feeling about where you put this. It is really just a decision about whether or not you want that to be a documented and permitted item, or whether or not you want it to be at will. Somebody has the capability to put up those window signs and they decide to do so or not. The argument for not doing it is an administrative burden, and it is, you know, if somebody doesn't have to get a permit, that makes it easier for them to do this thing. The benefit to putting it in this section is if somebody has to get a permit, then we're going to know that they're actually doing what they're supposed to, and if they have window-mounted signs and they've never gotten a permit, then we know those signs are illegal. We have a lot of illegal window signs in town. I mean, you know, we can talk about McDonald's or whatever, and there's lots of illegal signs associated with that. If we decide that we want to allow more signs, again, that's really up to the commission. So where we had left this, and again, wherever the commission wants to be with this is fine with me. I just want to give you the capability, because we've had this conversation. Where this has been left is that you would be able to have up to two in a building, and that for smaller buildings, you would have up to 10 square feet, and for buildings that are larger, you would have up to 30 square feet. And so we kind of left the idea of not saying so much how that was done as much as here's your maximum sign. So one of them might be a small open sign and then a large, you know, you can kind of take it how you want. And we can get rid of the limitation on number. You can just stick, that was another item we talked about previously, is not giving a number of window signs, but just giving a square footage.
Have we had any feedback from the commercial folks that are putting up signs in windows? Owner of McDonald's, the Marathon Station. Are people aware, I guess, that we're looking at this and that they are potentially in violation of what we're considering doing?
So I have not done an outreach with businesses on this. And what I would tell you is it is clear that businesses want to do this because they are.
Yeah.
So that's what I would tell you is it is clear they want to. So the question is really, what do you want to allow? And is your concern based on just the appearance of something inside the window? Because again, when you think about a McDonald's or a Marathon, lots of things just inside the window.
Mm-hmm.
Or is your concern about things that are lit inside of a window? So thinking about what your concern is and then regulating that item is really where you want to be. If you're not concerned about it, don't regulate it. So that's where I think I don't know that we have really clarified where the commission is on this. whether you're concerned about just signs that are inside of a window. I mean, and again, lots of folks putting up lots of different kinds of advertisements inside a window. Or is it the function of them being lit? It would be one of my major questions for you.
So at present, lit up signs are relatively rare as I walk around the town, but
more all the time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of what I'm saying.
Okay.
It's clear that businesses want to have these signs.
Yeah.
It draws attention to their business.
It does, which is just like any other sign issue. That's the balance, right? Business owners typically want to draw more attention, and then typically as we think about, you know, signs, how much attention is too much attention, so it becomes a distraction from the road or the sidewalk or so forth. Signs are the hardest thing in the world to regulate because everyone has opinions and a lot of them are aesthetic, and I think in the case of the sign ordinance, we really want to focus on the idea of distractions and things like that versus getting involved in, you know, what is aesthetically pleasing, and we need to keep it kind of more to safety and order. But there is an argument that has been successfully made, and you have the right to regulate commercial speech, so we're in safe legal ground there. It's just a matter of what you think is appropriate.
This has been the most discussed.
And but without a conclusion.
Over the years, it's been the most discussed.
Yeah. And I still don't have a sense that we really. Right.
Right. I think you hit on one point: is how much of a distraction might it be? Have to be concerned for safety of someone driving by and not looking where they're driving, or in a pedestrian crosswalk and they're looking at a sign and they don't even look where they're at. That's an important factor to think of.
The other thing to remember, and this would be a little bit more of a departure from your existing sign ordinance, but the other thing to remember is you can further break up these sign districts. So you could have your commercial industrial that deals with your higher zoning, like a B2. And you could have a separate one that deals with the central business district. Because if your concern, again, is about the kind of business core of Main Street and the level of distraction there because of with all the activity that's already on Main Street and the safety concerns already, then you could also regulate differently based on that zoning category. So bear in mind that the permutations on this are pretty endless, so it really comes down to if you tell me what your concern is, then I can probably come up with a way to address that concern without adding a lot of other things that then create, downstream effects we weren't trying to do. So, for example, if you say, what I'm really concerned about is flashing signs, I can deal with that. If you tell me what I'm really concerned about is any kind of lit sign, we can talk about that. If you tell me you're concerned about this Main Street downtown area, that's where you're concerned about the distractibility, then we can deal with that. But it would actually be better for us to address those actual specific items than kind of broader language. I kind of put this in as a placeholder with some of the things we had talked about, but I don't think in any realm is this language finished or prepared for prime time.
Oh, I agree. I think it's a safety issue.
It's a flashing sign.
The flashing signs, and yeah.
Do you mind the lit sign?
No, I think
no.
Doesn't bother me. The flashing, the movement.
Okay.
Right.
So flashing and moving signs. Is there a difference in your mind between downtown and, for example, Route 60 or Ambrier?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
there's a lot of congestion up there too, though, isn't there?
Ambrier is not on the main road, mm-hmm. So you really aren't. It's not like Main Street here.
No, and it's in
and
the parking
traffic.
Lot itself, so
right.
It's not.
Well, of course, McDonald's is on the main road.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
right.
So part of what I want to get at is, is the concern, and again, we talked about square footages before, that smaller businesses would have less and larger businesses would have more, but we could also do it geographically, or you could do it by zoning district. So that's another thing to bear in mind.
Would it be easier to do it by zoning?
Yes.
And I think that's where we could start.
Yeah, that'd be easier to, yeah, come up with a solution or anything, yeah, right.
And we might have a different set of rules for one over the other.
Right, and so then that opens up the question if there are other things in the central business district that you would want to do differently. So you don't have to answer that now, but that's another set of things you could ponder, if there are things within the central business district besides window mounted signs you might want to do differently. So in the central business district, what I would be picturing then is a smaller limitation in terms of size and number on windows, and then open it up wider, particularly for larger structures outside of the central business district. Okay. I will work on that and bring something back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Should we decide, since we're here though, whether or not we should do permitted or non-permitted? Like whether or not they have to get a permit form? Or do you want to revisit that next time?
I think you can tell me if y'all are ready to make a decision on that. Would you like window signs to be required to have a permit, or do you want them to have general permission to put up a window sign as long as they follow these parameters?
I would go for non-permitted, as long as they follow.
Yeah, because that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Both here.
And it doesn't allow for any kind of spontaneity.
Right.
Okay.
If they're going to have a special that week or special event, you know, they didn't think of last week, they couldn't do it.
Right.
Okay, so then what I would do is I would move window signs generally to signs allowed without a permit. And then what I would do is I would break down some building size, as well as whether it was generally commercial or whether it was in the central business district.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so then we won't talk about what the next one says with window mounted signs. We'll keep moving. And then we have signs located in residential and agricultural. Again, this is really same as it was, not looking to make any changes there. The next section. So as you're in the public comment period, the next couple sections are completely new, and they have been essentially lifted from ordinances that have been through more testing in court than ours has. And they're really trying to address some of these questions about when you have businesses that have closed and you have signs sitting out there long term, and the desire to make sure that things are being maintained. I will tell you generally, in terms of things like the nonconformity side, nonconformity is heavily regulated by state code. So anything you're going to have in this with nonconformity of signs, the idea of if it is destroyed more than 50%, that's actually pretty broadly already in state code. I'm not sure that you would end up with anything, you know, I'd have to go back and really noodle if somebody has sign destroyed, but we already have a fair amount in code already that's not up to us on that. So I'm not sure that that's something you can move away from, but you don't have to explicitly state it in your ordinance either. So let's just generally talk about these with alteration, repair, removal, because again, you had some good points brought up, for example, in your public comment about if you want to require people to make them smaller if they're non-conforming, or whether you want them to be able to maintain that use. So starting out with alteration, repair, removal, if deemed unsafe or if it's damaged. So if a sign becomes unsafe, this is the ability where if the building official has said this is unsafe, we can actually make it a zoning violation. So currently, if the building official decides a sign is unsafe, he can, under building code, already require somebody to take it down under building code. This gives us another means by which to address a structurally unsound sign. So there are times that we, the building official and I, overlap with each other and use, you know, we will pick which code makes the most sense to handle, depending on which way, what kind of issue it is. So again, if it's something that gives anybody heartburn, we don't have to have it. We do already have a means to address this through the building official, but this gives us another means to do so. The next one is removal and lawful erection of the sign. So somebody has put up a sign, they didn't get a permit, and this is just giving the means by which to make very clear that they're required to remove it. And again, we have some ability, again, to do that. You see, a town employee may immediately remove the sign without prior notice. That's the real change in this compared to what our current ordinance has. If you put up an illegal sign right now on your property, and that sign's illegal, that I have prosecuted as a zoning violation, this allows some ability for the town to say, that's an illegal sign, you put it in a place where we can't see to get on and off the right of way, we're going to remove it, and we're going to tell you we removed it after we did it because it shouldn't have been there anyway. Mm-hmm. So that is allowing the town another means by which to do that. Removal of copy on signed face, discontinuance of a pertinent use. So if the use of a structure or a property is discontinued, the copy on the signed face shall be removed by the owner or lessee of the property on which the sign is located within 2 years from the date of the discontinuance of the site. If they fail to remove it, we may cause the copy to be removed. So you had, where was Acres of Virginia? When Acres closed, at some point it became the Monacan Indian Nation. All this says is they can leave that monument, the face comes off. So that then when somebody else comes in, they can put a new face on it, but you don't have people going, why is there, you know, or, and a lot of this comes down to that idea of sign maintenance and the concern about if that's sitting there and it's fading and it gets cracked and it's not really going to a business that's there anymore and nobody really kind of claims it. Liability for cost of removal by the town. Again, if I cause one to be removed, whether that's a sign face or due to the provisions, that's a fee that is chargeable to the owner of the property. Custody and destruction of removed signs, cardboard and paper signs that have been removed by the town pursuant to this section shall be destroyed upon removal. This says if I have gone through town and I have removed signs in the right of way, I don't have to keep them. I can throw them away. I will let you know that I do that anyway because VDOT says I can, but this would also then apply to other signs that get removed by the zoning administrator or by town staff, that, you know, if it's cardboard or paper, we don't have to keep it. This really does match what we do anyway, because even in the traffic circle, when I have occasionally had somebody put a nice, like one of those heavy-duty metal signs in the traffic circle, we have not thrown those away. We have called the owners of those signs and said, that's an expensive sign, and I know you don't want it to be thrown away, so we have it at town hall so you can come get it, because you can't have it in the traffic circle. And generally speaking, people are appreciative of that.
Mrs. Driscoll, can I make one comment about the removal of signs after 2 years?
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that could also cause us to lose some history, so it's something to keep in mind. Like the Birch and Ogden sign would be in violation of this, because that business has been closed for more than 2 years, so signs like that would have to come down as well if we end up implementing that rule.
Okay.
Okay. Where is that located?
Right
here in the Central Business District.
Birch and Ogden.
Oh, okay. No, no.
Anytime a business closes, the sign would have to come down
right
after 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fighting with my computer tonight. For some reason, my touchscreen isn't working, which has stuck me using the little mouse, which is very time-consuming. And it keeps wanting to just go up to the next page instead of letting me see non-conforming signs without having it zoomed in. I realize I'm spoiled by my touchscreen. Okay, so a non-conforming sign may continue subject to the provisions, conditions, and so forth. So, B, alteration of copy. So the copy of a non-conforming sign may be altered by refacing the sign. This goes to the idea of, it was the Monica Nation, if somebody else comes in, even if that sign doesn't meet our current standard, they can still reface the sign. Mm-hmm. This is enshrined in state law. You can't have it be otherwise. That sign structure exists, and if it is a legally permitted sign structure, that is enshrined in state law. So alteration of sign structure. This is the part where you have the capability to choose, and this goes directly to what Mr. Sundermuthy talked about. A non-conforming sign shall not be structurally altered, provided that the zoning administrator may authorize the sign, non-conforming sign, to be structurally altered so that it is less non-conforming. So what this gets at is that somebody has, let's take McDonald's. I don't know that their sign's non-conforming, but we'll just pick on them because everybody knows what they look like. Say McDonald's has a non-conforming sign that is bigger than what they're currently allowed under the ordinance. And they reface it. I have nothing to say about that. I cannot have anything to say about that. Say McDonald's needs to do a structural alteration to that sign. The base of the sign, the concrete's cracked, the metal post is problematic, they're gonna need to redo their actual sign structure. At that point under this code, if that sign was bigger than what they're allowed, I can say to them, when you replace, you have to do a reduction in size to make yourself more conforming to the current code. Again, this is a standard practice, but it is not one that you have to take up. It's really up to you, but this is a pretty standard practice to say, as you structurally reduce signs, they need to get better. This is honestly how a lot of localities who had kind of the old, you know, east-west and north-south highways where things were, and, you know, my experience again, Chesterfield County, you had Jeff Davis Highway, which was the old 1301 going through the county. This is how, over time, the signage on that highway looks better, not worse. Mm-hmm. Because as people are doing things and they're making those structural changes, they're having to come more into compliance with the code. So it becomes a overtime improvement. But again, you do not have to do that if you do not want to. I found my mouse again so I can go to the next page because I keep losing it on the screen. There it is. Consolidation, two or more non-conforming signs on a lot may be consolidated into a single sign, provided that the resulting sign area and sign height shall be reduced again by at least 25% of its current area. So again, if you've got non-conformity, trying to get them to consolidate it and do this long-term reduction. This is more complex than what you have. And again, you may feel like you don't have signs that this is a particular issue for, but you don't have a lot of signs where you're like, that's really oversized compared to what we allow now, and we don't need to have this. It wouldn't hurt my feelings if you took it out. This is one of those things I took from another code as a best practice. But
isn't it better to have it?
Well, it's one of those things that structurally it makes a lot of sense. So, and that's why I included it, is because since we decided we were going to reopen this particular Pandora's box, this time we decided to go for it and really look at all of these things that we've been noodling about. So this essentially just says we're going to make those non-conformities when they have to do structural things. But again, remember, this is only structural improvements. Mm-hmm. Changes to sign faces, that's part of your legal non-conformity and cannot require or trigger any of these changes.
I kind of like it.
I'm sorry, Ann. Do we have examples of signs like this in our town? I'm trying hard to think where this might be applied.
So the biggest thing I think you would have in town is I don't think you have as much things that are super oversized. I think you may have things that are height or setback nonconforming.
Okay, such as...
So I do know of some signs that are closer to our roadway than they should be by our current code. And so what this would say is if they were doing that structural improvement, we would be asking them to be coming into greater conformity with the code. Or if when, and again, I haven't measured the McDonald's sign, but if the McDonald's sign is bigger than what they're allowed to have and they were making a structural change, or Marathon, you know, Marathon's pretty tall, I think at that point I'd be saying we're making. Now, the last time Marathon did anything with their signs was all refacing.
Right.
So wasn't even an issue at that time to discuss. Mm-hmm. And that is why you will notice that sign maintenance on signs that are bigger than what is typically allowed is really excellent.
Pretty
because
good.
Yeah. They're not going to have that be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't let those signs get cattywampus, because as soon as that structure gets problematic, this is a pretty typical inclusion.
Mm-hmm. Function of government.
So a non-conforming sign without copy on its face for a continuous period of 2 years shall lose its non-conforming status and be removed by the owner of the lot on which the sign is located. Okay, so just keep picking on the Monacan Indian Nation building. So at the point they removed that face, there's a new clock that starts ticking. And the new clock that would start ticking would say at some point in the future you could compel them to take the sign down. This is where this one's a little trickier, because now you're actually gonna, and not tricky from a legal point of view, but can be expensive, because you can picture if Marathon went out of business and 2 years went by and they took down the face of the sign, and another 2 years went by and you still had this empty sign structure and an empty building, that people might be like, that sign should go. Whereas they may have a very different feeling about a monument sign, like at a bank or at the Monacan Indian Nation, where, okay, so now I've got a brick monument and it has no sign on it, and it's not really changing or deteriorating or looking bad, or it's not an eyesore. So, we could, if you like that is something that I, but you want it to require more action, I could work with Kelly to find a way to say that it would have to be compelled based on some criteria or some decision of the governing body or the planning commission, so that it wouldn't be a standard practice, but there would
be
something in there that would allow a door to get into that. But I would need to check with Kelly to see how we could structure that.
Yeah,
and that would be interesting to look at.
Yeah,
right, that would
like,
kind of be
yeah.
the not quite column A or column B,
right.
but allows you kind of an entryway into dealing with
right.
it if a sign becomes problematic.
Right, because like an empty Marathon sign, and there's no gas station, it's been 3 years, why is that sign even still there? The building's either gone and the sign's still up. That happened in Madison Heights. I mean,
right.
they did take signs down there for businesses that had been gone before I moved here. So that makes sense, I think, to remove that.
Okay. I will kind of see nods around
but
the
if
table.
It's a, if it's a, if it has a, you know, historical value to the town, we may not want to remove, like you said, if it's a monument kind of sign and it's a remembrance of a something that was here before, you may not want to take that down.
Well, and realistically, different types of signs
mm-hmm.
have different levels of impact, you know, and
right.
again, you know, if, remember that this also is dealing specifically with non-conforming signs, so the burden
right.
on the zoning administrator would be to show that that sign was legally non-conforming,
Starboard.
Not a just any old sign.
Mm-hmm.
So any old sign that was a completely legal sign would not be in this bucket.
That's true.
It would just be, for example, if I said the Marathon sign was taller than what you're allowed
right.
currently, and now it's been sitting there
oh,
for a long
okay,
period
yeah,
of time. So just, you know, do remember
right.
that we're not talking about all signs
right.
that have to
right.
go away, just ones that are non-conforming. But I'll still just ask and see if there's something we can do that there's maybe a little bit more of a process associated with that as opposed to just an automatic thing. Because again, part of what a process would allow you is, you know, say you knew that the marathon, somebody was coming in for redevelopment, and, you know, 2 months before they come in and redevelop it, you've taken away the sign, and now you're compelling them to spend more money. So maybe we can talk about what that would look like. Okay, so did I get all of that?
What about relocating signs from a business property to off the business property? You still have the same sign.
So then, are you assuming it's a legal sign or a legally non-conforming sign?
Well, it's never been conforming for a long time. So, it got moved to another side of the road.
So the answer would be no, that you can't. If it's a legal sign in one location and you want to move it to another location and you can properly permit it in that location, then that's fine. If it's a legally non-conforming sign, you can't move it. So we actually had that happen in town where somebody had a legally non-conforming sign. It was not on their property. They wanted to shift the location of it. They couldn't come to terms with the person whose property it was on, and the sign ended up having to go away. Because the only allowed location for that sign was the one that it was in. It was a legally non-conforming sign. You couldn't move it. Once you moved it, that was it. And so that's where you can't shift your non-conformity. You know, one of the things we talk about, whether it's in residential or commercial development, is sometimes people pay money to buy a non-conformity.
Yes.
Which can also be why you may want to have a process before you have a sign removed at a marathon or something, because there is an actual commercial value sometimes to the nonconformity, which is beneficial. And so sometimes you want there to be a process to talk about whether you wanted to allow that beneficial part of that nonconformity to remain for a future user, or whether you're going to say, you know, their benefit does not outweigh the community benefit. Yes, sir. Okay, discontinuous use of structure to which sign pertains, a non-conforming sign containing copy that is commercial safety, shall lose its non-conforming status and be removed by the owner of the lot on which the sign is located if the use to which the sign pertains is discontinued more than 2 years. Again, dealing with non-conforming signs and requiring some level of removal, let's talk about process, and I'll see it with Kelly with that. This is enshrined in state code, shall not be enlarged or extended, shall be maintained in good repair and condition. These are things that we're putting it in our code, but those are state items. Relocation shall not be moved to another location on the same lot. That is currently in your code under nonconformity, so you don't have to have it here, but this puts it kind of, again, I'm following best practice. This is what is typical, so I've put it here as well. Non-conforming sign may be replaced or restored only as provided by it as below. If it is destroyed or damaged by the owner of the sign or the owner of the lot in which the sign shall not be replaced or restored unless it complies with this article. In other words, you have to come into conformity. I saw one in Cumberland. It actually happened before I got there, but there was a huge issue with a non-conforming sign. It actually was barely outside the right-of-way, and a car hit it, and the sign was destroyed. And that was a reason why that business owner ran for the Board of Supervisors, because he could not believe that he was not allowed to rebuild that sign. But, that's where, when you have something that is legally non-conforming and it is destroyed, you end up with that as a real issue. So if you comply, you can rebuild. Then non-conforming sign that is destroyed or damaged as a result of factors beyond the control of the owner of the sign and the owner of the lot, to the extent of the destruction exceeds 50%, shall not be replaced. So that was the case of that business center in Cumberland. It was completely destroyed. It was over 50%, and he couldn't. And it was not an act of his. A car hit it. So those are hard things to tell property owners.
But if you're not in the setback property to begin with, you're already in non-conformity. If you're not in the setback property to begin with, you're already in non-conformity, so you have no recourse.
Right, he was non-conforming, and that was honestly one of those situations. These are sometimes hard because For example, on that property, this was an existing business that was an auto repair business in Cumberland County. At some point, the sign was in a good location. At some point, VDOT expanded the road. The nonconformity came to him, but it didn't change the situation that that business was in when that destruction occurred. So it wasn't even something that at the time was a bad decision on the part of that business owner. That's a portion of Route 60 that VDOT came through and put in two lanes on each side with a turn lane in the middle. And so you had that widening of 60 in that location, and he was in that location. So those can be very difficult conversations for people who are those business and property owners.
Yeah.
And nonconformity is not as a thing, didn't I get them through that one already?
Yeah, number three.
Number three is the one I'm on?
Mm-hmm.
Results beyond the factor of control of the owner of the sign and the owner of the lot, which sign and extent is 50% or greater of the appraised value, may be replaced or restored, provided the replacement or restoration is completed within 2 years after the date of destruction and damage, and the sign is not enlarged or extended. So you've got a lot of different parameters here. If it's more than 50%, if it's less than 50%, if they did it, if they didn't do it. So if it's 50% of less, they can replace the same as it was. If it's more than 50%, they cannot. If they did it themselves, they cannot. So, and then of course removal, if it's an unsafe condition, this is very similar to the removal on the other thing. So it's a little bit broader because your previous removal for unsafe conditions specifically said the building official.
Oh.
This one, if it's non-conforming, it brings that standard down a little bit and talks about a public safety official. And it doesn't say structural, it just says unsafe condition. So if it's a legal sign, you have a fairly high bar you have to meet. Structural, determined by building official. When you're in the non-conforming section, now you're saying unsafe condition, which can mean a lot of different things, and it's a public safety official. So just be aware of those differences and making sure that that doesn't give anybody heartburn. And as I say, with all of the non-conformity language, these are our best practices, and if you don't like them, we'll stick with our existing non-conforming work. And I think we just have one left. And the one that's left is having a registry of non-conforming signs. Here's why that's important. There are signs that right now in town, I know, were illegally put up. And I know that they were illegally put up because they have either occurred since I have been here, or, and we've talked about some of those. I mean, like I said, Driscoll Funeral Home put out a sign in front of the cemetery. It's been here since I've been here. So I know that. Versus what I am pretty sure are some non-conforming signs for churches pointing people down the road. The idea of having a registry says essentially that we're not necessarily going after people, but we're starting to document so that if I leave, and somebody else comes in, they don't assume that must be a legal sign because it was here when I got here. And so it provides that greater level of enforcement for the future. I would not try to go back and retroactively create such a thing. It's more a thing that you would start to, where you know it occurs, you would start to note it, and kind of, we keep a zoning permit log, and you just start to keep a log of what you know about. So that, you know, where possible. And then as people came in with permits, you would just continue to add to that. So.
I think that's a good idea.
Makes it easier.
Yes.
You've got it.
That's pretty things we'll try.
You've actually got it in writing so that it's.
Yeah, and right that way there's no gray area.
Right.
Was it here? Was it not here? I don't remember.
Right.
Yeah.
So it does sound like we have more changes tonight than what I thought we were going to. So I think what I'm hearing is I need to do a little more tweaking on this and bring it back to you next month. Maybe we'll be close enough next month that we can set a public hearing and get some additional public comment and kind of talk about the whole of the thing as one and see where folks are. Does that sound like a plan?
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
You all put a lot of work in that. Thank you, Vicki. Any concerns from the commissioners?
Okay. I have one other item, if I may. I have a case with the Board of Zoning Appeals on Monday, and this is the most straightforward variance I think I have ever had in my entire career. I'm so excited to be going to the Board of Zoning Appeals with something that I think is such a straightforward case. On West Court Street, there are two existing lots. I'll actually show you on GIS because you can see it pretty clearly. If you look at West Court Street and you see this 167 and 173, which are side by side, and it looks like this property line is kind of in the middle between the two of them. In reality, it's not. In reality, that property line actually goes through 173. So those houses have been owned for decades by the same people. They are not houses where somebody bought this knowing there was a problem. 173 is owned by Gilbert and Patricia Rose, and one of them, the next door neighbor, is a descendant of the Brown family. The Browns have owned that property for decades, and it has now gone to an estate. And so they're trying to get these properties straight before anything is sold.
Right.
So because 173 is legally non-conforming, it has a property line through the house, and the fix for this, to move that property line over, actually makes 167 non-conforming because the lot width in that zoning district for a house is 75 feet. And to split the difference between the two houses, each lot will be 67 feet wide. So in order to make this change, they will require a variance to do that boundary line adjustment. They're not looking to do anything different than what's currently being done with those properties. They're just looking to get it straight so that those properties can be transferred in the future. So the Board of Zoning Appeals has a variance request. They'll have a public hearing on that on Monday. I had completely forgotten that our code says that the Planning Commission gets to hear about BZA cases before, until I was doing my staff report. And then I saw that because, you know, you kind of use the same format for the staff report every time. And I thought, oh, it's a good thing we have a Planning Commission meeting. So here we are. Do you have any questions about that variance request from the Browns and the Roses?
There was no argument against the variance change from either party. But it doesn't affect the neighbors on the other side of them.
So. No, it is just those two homes. And we sent out the public notice on it, and I have not received even one question or comment from any neighbors.
Is there
really
any
surprised.
Fence already put up? Is one of those two probably have a fence, permanent fence between them?
No.
Okay, that would now put it in the other yard or whatever.
No, so the property line goes through the edge of 173, like right in here. And
okay.
It'll actually, when it is completed, it will look like what it looks like on the GIS.
Gotcha.
It's just not what it's like in real life when you survey it.
So what if the house is placed incorrectly to start with? And the lines still right. But
these are very, very old lots, and they are very old houses.
So they didn't know where the line really was when they built the house.
It probably wasn't a line.
I think
the surveyor was doing it.
Yes.
I think it's quite possible that you're talking about the kind of plat that is, you know, the line goes from that tree.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
The skunk that used to be there.
That's right.
And, you know, Those things are very different than our currently geo-referenced plats that we have. So anyway, the surveyor who's doing the work is Joe Shoup, and he is the Kinzer Street one. It's the new business here on Main Street, and he's been a delight to work with. So happy about that too.
Okay.
Next, the bonfire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, do I have a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.
I am sure, because that's the